This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, now you know who I'm talking about, right? Nakane Touré. Let's get this guy in here. TouchCentral.fm, CliffCentral.com. Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday. Hey, look at you. Yeah, look at you. Nice to have you here. Hold on a second. Let me turn on your microphone. You think I'd have that ready for you, right?
You know, we only try to run a professional establishment.
Yeah, yeah. We try very hard, but sometimes it, you know, people realize that we're amateurs.
That's endearing.
I got to tell you, that Christopher's a hell of a song. That's the kind of tourist Christopher song. One of many of the hits that you've been producing lately. You've just done a collaboration with Black Coffee, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
You sing they on
came
his
out,
track.
They came out almost a year ago now, actually.
Strangely. Really?
Yeah, I was looking at my... Because Facebook never lets you forget anything.
Anything.
So after I looked at the bad decisions that I've made over the years, I saw that the song had come out about a year ago. Yeah.
Oh, come on. Bad decisions. I mean, you've probably made some really good decisions looking back. Huh?
Sometimes. I mean, there are some things that I...
Are you one of those people who beats yourself up over bad decisions?
Not anymore. I mean, there was a time when I was very guilt-ridden about certain things because I used to be a Christian.
You used to be a Christian?
Used to be.
Yeah.
When did Jesus walk out the door?
I walk out of Jesus. Oh my goodness.
Wow.
It's already started.
What happened?
I found myself in a very tight spot in my life, and I just, all those people who I was told to leave because they were going to lead me to hell were the ones who were there for me.
Uh-huh.
And all those people that I was told to sort of spend time with and go to Bible study with were not there.
Yeah.
And so I found, and those people who were always encouraging me to go to church or go to Bible study and go to band practice, et cetera, were not there anymore to sort of goad me to go to church.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was left to my own devices and actually had to ask myself if I really believed in it, then I realized that I really didn't. It was like herd instinct.
It was like a club.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, basically.
And you just eventually outgrew it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I call religion a sort of, at least Christianity to me, like a mother tongue, you know. It's something that I was taught in my formative years, so it will always be a part of me. So I just, but now I just know that I don't believe in it anymore.
It's more of a tradition, it's more of a cultural thing than it is something that you really believe in.
It's
just
something that I did repetitively over years.
They drum it into your head when it's soft.
Exactly.
That's true. You're preaching to the converted here, if you'll pardon a religious pun.
Was there a lot of guilt on your part when you walked out of the big JC? I mean, I'm sure there was.
Of course, because you're going to go to hell.
People make you feel guilty because now, how can you leave? That means we might also be wrong.
Well, people still make me feel guilty. I was at the Psalmist a couple of weeks. When were the Psalmist? Anyway, I was at the Psalmist.
Who can tell? Yeah.
And. And I got a message from someone who I used to go to church with, who was a very good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Basically telling me that I have been officially excommunicated.
Oh, well.
And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I knew I was excommunicated. I don't understand why.
It's one less venue you have to sing at.
That doesn't pay.
Well, listen, you were actually raised in PE mostly, right?
Mostly in PE, yes.
Yeah. And a lot of, there's actually a lot of musical talent from PE.
Mm, yeah.
I wonder what it is. The Eastern Cape, is it the climate? Is it Xhosa culture? Is it,
I have a theory. I think it's because music, I mean, I was actually in PE a couple of, like last week, and I went to my primary school, and music is everywhere.
Yeah.
In the schools, it's taught, everyone is encouraged to do music until they choose not to, maybe when they're like 12. But from grade one, everyone does music. Everyone goes to music class.
Even the untalented one.
They're told not to sing, dance.
I'm amazed. Out of all the instruments that you decided to play, the first one you chose was a trombone?
The first one was a piano, actually, but I didn't have a piano to rehearse at home, so I wasn't getting any better. But the teachers saw that I had some sort of talent, so they said, well, try this. And I'd never seen a trombone before, and it looked interesting.
Trombone's the one with
the slide. Yeah,
it's got the slide on it.
Yeah, it's a horn with the slide.
Right.
Is that thing heavy, holding it and doing the sliding action? Does it get tiring?
No. I mean, well, your shoulder after a while, yeah. But, you know, I was very young when I started doing it, and it didn't hurt me. A tuba is very, very heavy.
That's the big... That's the big thing. But that is a fascinating instrument to play. You can also play the steel drums. You can also play the piano. Drums, yeah. You can also play what else?
Guitar, yes. Marimbas, drums a little bit. Man.
So you're a bit of an overachiever, no?
Yeah, well, totally.
I'm joking. It's the thing that John Lennon said, like, give me an instrument and I'll make something out of it.
It's impressive.
Because you're musically inclined.
The music lives in you and it just needs to find a way out.
Exactly. Out of anything.
So whether it's an instrument, whether it's your voice, and you're lucky.
A computer.
Isn't it lucky for you, though, that you've got a beautiful voice as well? Because
thank you.
You write your own music.
Yes.
And it would be so sad if you were like Bob Dylan, where you wrote great songs, but you sound it like this. Because Bob Dylan, look, we all love him, and I can appreciate his songs. But if you think of some of his greatest songs, how much better they sound when someone else sings
them. Covers them.
It feels sad to me that he didn't have a natural instrument that was as
good. I used to be so obsessed with Bob Dylan, especially, I mean, there was a time when I was studying at Wits, and I was studying literature, actually.
Yeah.
And I was in a lot of bands, and we were very into Bob Dylan. And I was trying to listen to his music again recently, and I felt like I've fallen out of love with him. And it hurts me, because it's like...
Oh,
it's
shame, you've fallen out of love.
It used to be this thing that I used to hold very dear to my heart.
Oh, I'm so sad to hear that.
Oh, well.
You've fallen out of love with Bob Dylan. You fell out of love with Jesus. You must be very lonely.
I've got new friends. who get me?
Now, when I was reading about you, I read that you had this obsession with your mother's record collection.
Yes.
You would get in there and you'd listen to some absolutely stunning stuff. And this is how I know that you're the real deal. The OJs.
Yes.
Ooh. Weather Report.
Yeah.
Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
Manhattans.
Manhattans. Dude. Mm. When you're a kid, though, that nobody else likes that music. It's just you.
No, I always tell this anecdote, but I used to have friends over for sleepovers, and they were like, let's play some music. Because I didn't listen to any radio or any popular music at the time in the late 90s or something.
What were they listening to?
Eminem or I don't know. And
you were like, this
is bullshit.
I didn't
get it. And I was like, why are they talking?
They're supposed to sing.
Why are they not singing?
You were thinking, baby, I need your loving.
Huh? Some emotion, some melody.
Your loving. Oh, that's some good stuff.
So I would play those records, and my friends would be like, what are you doing now? You know, but I wasn't touched. I loved it. I still do, actually.
And I also hear, and you must tell me if this is true or not, because there's lots of stories that we get guests in here and we find out things on the internet about them, but they're not true, or sometimes they are. I hear you worked in a gospel music store.
Oh, I worked in two.
Okay, so you
I was incredibly devout.
Yeah, you sound
I
like
was,
it.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I love books and I love music. I want to work in a store that has both, so I must go work at Qum or at Gospel Direct, and I worked at both.
Wow.
That was incredibly boring.
Selling people that stuff. Is it boring? What kind of people shop there? I've never been into these stores.
People will tell you to smile because they should have the joy of the Lord in you. And they're like, well, I'm really depressed today. I'm sure God gets it.
Wow. It's amazing how some people who are very into that kind of thing expect everyone else to also be.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're very insulted.
There's no spectrum of the human sort of human emotions whatsoever. Like, if the Bible says there's joy, then that's just all you have for the rest of your life. Your mom's just died. Oh, hell, I have the joy of the Lord.
And then, I mean, being a gay guy, this has got to suck, because they also tell you that you are
in tundra.
They're telling you that it's an abomination and that you are a pervert.
Yeah.
And that you're going against God and nature.
Yes.
And you're like, but I don't hate myself. I actually kind of like who I am.
Well, that is fairly recent.
You didn't
myself.
Like yourself before.
Oh, God,
then.
No. I spent a lot of time suppressing and repressing who I was. But I mean, I came out of the closet when I was 17 to my friends in high school. And then I went back in when I converted to a born-again Christian. Yeah. And there was this whole yo-yo.
Those are meant to be the enlightened ones, right?
What, the born-agains?
I say with lots of sarcasm.
You know, I mean, I think as someone who was very devout, I understand why religion plays such a big part in people's lives and why it matters to a lot of people. And how sometimes it can be very beautiful. Whereas my boyfriend is like, oh, it's a lot of bullshit.
He's militant.
You know, I'm like, well, he's British, so.
Okay.
It's funny. It's always interesting that they brought it here and then now they've sort of like left it.
Yeah. Well, don't you also find it pretty strange? And I've got to be careful how I tread here because I don't want to upset people, but I always think it's really weird. No, I don't actually. I think it's really weird how so many Black people in South Africa are so much more devout than white people, but white people brought that whole thing here.
Look, there are a number of Black people, you know, who say this all the time.
You know, it's to me, it's the ultimate colonialism. It's the colonialism of the mind and the spirit and the soul, which is like, if you're going to throw off the irons of apartheid and colonialism and slavery, we've got to throw off another big shackle that no one's talking about.
We need to start decolonizing our spirituality.
I think,
because we still look at our spirituality as something that's demonic, as something that's ugly, as something that should be my aunt is a Sangoma. She was telling me this last week actually, that this woman who came to her didn't want to be seen to be parking a car at her house because what would people think?
Yeah,
that
you
she's
see.
Just a Sangoma.
But that's also there's something about all of us. It's a societal thing in South Africa and probably the rest of the world. Who knows? But we're always so concerned with what other people think of us. And you said now you've only just started to really love yourself and and come to terms with who you are. And that is probably where you found your greatest creativity as well.
It was so freeing just because there were things I couldn't talk about. There's certain language that I couldn't use that I really found interesting, but I couldn't write because I was Christian or things I couldn't touch on or books I couldn't read. I remember reading William Burroughs' Naked Lunch and after I finished it, put it under the bed because I was like, I was going to go to hell. But I really loved it, you know. But the moment that I sort of freed myself, there was now there's unlimited things to talk about and how I could talk about them and how I could move on stage and how I could dress on stage, you know, because there was always that you have to be dignified, you know. WWJD. What would Jesus do? Yeah. You know, would Jesus be wearing short shorts on stage? No, he wouldn't. So put on your trousers.
and of course, like, I suppose as a gay guy, you could decide to go like full on flaming gay and like walk around in, you know, outrageous outfits.
Which can be amazing.
Sure, of course. Or do you kind of hold on to the mainstream audience and try to be one of those accessible kinds of guys?
Identity is malleable, you know. I think it depends on what you ate last night and what conversations you were having that morning.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and part of being queer is the fun in playing with identity.
That's why I like a lot of gay people, because they're having fun.
Fuck, man, life is hard enough, you know.
Right. If you look at most people in the world, straight or gay, are very repressed. They're very anxious about what everyone else thinks of them. They're scared to voice their opinions on things. They're scared to be them.
Of course.
And when they break through that wall, whatever their sexual orientation is, they're just a whole lot more fun.
Completely. Most of the time.
So
they've never had any freedom and they just go completely insane.
Drug binges and sex binges. And,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Which can be fun.
Have you done that? Did you go all that way?
When
you burst out of the closet?
Well, you know, it was so interesting. It was so controlled. It was so micro. It was like a micro dosage of coming out. It was like bit by bit, you know. So I could have sex. I could have sex with a man now, but I couldn't say Jesus. You know what I was. You know what I mean? Right. And then slowly over time, and then recently, well, in the past year, the floodgates had opened.
So have you behaved? Have you behaved particularly badly? Because you seem to me to be a very disciplined guy. Like, you have a lot of
discipline to my work.
Yeah, you have a lot of self-control.
In my work.
But you draw a line between work and play, and in play you're an animal?
My life informs my work. So I'm disciplined in that I have to work, I have to write, I have to practice, I have to la 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 la, I have to be good. But my music is about 90% of the time about my life, and life isn't pretty, you know? So, and the work must show that.
Yeah, that's another thing too, is that in accepting who you are and all the things that you do like and that maybe you don't like about yourself, you also have to confront a couple of rough edges that you know need work.
Oh, completely. And that's not nice. I don't know, on some level there's some joy in it, there's some masochistic behavior in sort of writing about yourself and looking at yourself in the mirror and going, oh my God, this is not a pretty image. Mm. But on some level, you know that there's someone out there who feels exactly the same way.
Yeah.
Right? And if that's not the point of art, to make people feel not less alone in the world, then I don't know what is. Because I know when I was 16 or 17 or whatever, late teens, and I read a James Baldwin novel, and for the first time in my life ever, you know, because I was like, oh my God, I'm a pervert, I'm an outsider, no one ever understands me, blah, 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 help, help, help.
Yeah, I'm a freak.
You know, exactly. That's the word I used, actually. And then I read Just Above My Head by James Baldwin, and I thought, he has the same desires as I do. He's black, he's queer, he's of a different generation, he's dead. But he felt exactly the same way. He had the same angers, etc., etc. So if I can do that for someone else, I mean, make no mistake, art is completely selfish, you know, on some level. This whole idea of like, I'm doing it for the people. Fuck, whatever.
It's narcissism, right? It is a little narcissistic. You're doing it, of course. It's your expression.
But that narcissism helps someone else deal with their shit.
Yeah,
you know,
they could resonate with them and have a very positive outcome.
Exactly. I mean, if you read and people are like, people talk about how gospel music is narcissistic. Have you read the Psalms? Like, it's all about me, my pain. Yeah, God, right. Why did you allow this to happen?
Right.
And it's incredibly beautiful, but it's about their pain. And when you read David's pain, you feel like, yeah, me too. You know, and that's the point of it all, I think.
What do you look at when you say you look in the mirror and you sometimes think you don't like what you see? I mean, what are you still dealing with that you're not happy about with regard to yourself? What kind of stuff bothers you about you?
I think I was always, here's the thing, right? I always had this idea of who I was for a long, long time. And I was controlled. I was disciplined. And there were certain things that I would never, ever, ever do, you know. And all of those were marked by my religion. All of those were marked by tradition. All of those were marked by family members and friends who made sure that I told the line, you know.
Yeah.
But I had other desires, you know, that are a little bit more dangerous.
This is good.
A little bit more seed.
Don't you sometimes feel, because I when I hear stories like yours, I'm always a little bit inspired, but I'm also a bit sad for those people who didn't make it through. Like, you've got your art to help you express yourself.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people, and I'm not just saying this has to do with sexual orientation or religion or any of those things. It could just be that some people don't fit in the box they're born into or fit into the society that they live in.
Mm.
And I feel that there are a lot of them who don't have a means of breaking out. Your means of breaking out was your singing, your music. It was a place you could be you. You could come to terms with yourself and find success too.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
a lot of these people don't have that. And then they're just trapped for life. You hear about women in abusive relationships. You hear about guys who aren't sure that they're actually meant to be in a guy's body.
Yeah.
You know, like the obvious Caitlyn Jenner example, but there are lots of others. There are people who are just desperately, desperately unhappy, and they have no way to get out.
Ever.
I feel sad for those people.
Yeah. I have no answer for that. I mean, I grew up in a family, and I did this TED talk about individuality and whether individuality is something that's learned or whether it's a generational thing or if it's something that you actually get from your ancestors on some level. And when I was doing research on it, I realized that there were generations of people who did whatever the hell they wanted to do. Okay.
There was a time.
You know,
like the 60s, a great time for those people.
You know, for some, in South Africa, not so easy.
No, okay, well, yes. That's why I said some people.
Yeah. When people say, which time would you like to go back to?
Yeah.
You know, always go, that's very insensitive to say that to a black person.
Yeah. No, we don't want to go back.
There's no other time that's ever great.
No time that was greater than now. But I think that's true for everyone. You know, everyone.
Well, yeah, but come on, guys. It was nicer for white people because they could do
Well,
things.
It was nicer, but if you asked me to go back in history to any other time in my ancestors, in my family tree, I don't think I'd choose one.
Yeah, I mean, the present is scary. It's incredibly frightening. And I was thinking about this yesterday, whether, I mean, I don't believe that we are any worse as a species. I just think that we have, everything is now, so we know exactly what's going on in the world, if we choose to know, right now, all the time, hammered all the time, repeatedly, you know, to the point where you feel nothing, So when you're seeing it, I mean, because when you're seeing that, another atrocity, oh, another tsunami.
Right.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's like overload.
Another killing, another bombing. At
least 10 people killed.
Yeah.
And that's always made me feel uncomfortable. That at least, I know what it means. I know it's journalism. You're like, at the least, you know. But it's like, oh, another one. Whereas before, you know, news are filtered. And so when you found out about a tsunami, tsunamis are happening. God hates us.
Well, there is something big about it.
Exactly.
And maybe it's just sensory overload, and maybe it's this instant gratification. And we don't know how to ascribe value to things anymore.
No, I think, I don't know. I feel like I feel like we're living in times where we pretend like we are an individualistic species, but there's never been a time where people are bullied more than now to adhere to whatever's the norm right now.
Social media is almost like a giant wine press, and we're all being squashed by it.
Basically.
Do you like social media?
Sometimes. I like Instagram. I don't follow any musicians on social media.
Why not?
Oh, why not? Is there jealousy?
Because I've seen how detrimental that can be for my mental health.
Explain.
Other musicians or following them?
Following other musicians.
Or detrimental to your
health. Oh, you mean, okay, because I know where you're going with this. Can I guess?
Please do.
Okay, I think this has to do with how everybody puts their best life on social media, and then they don't show you how tough it really is, so you get an unrealistic idea of how other people's success is enormous.
Exactly.
And you feel less.
Of course. I mean, it took a long time for me to get to wherever I am now. I don't even fucking know. We can say fuck on this thing, right?
You can say whatever you want.
But, I mean, I find it really, okay, so it's a very odd place to be for me, right? Because I posted something, I was in PE last week, and I posted something on social media that I was almost stabbed and someone robbed me, right? And I was just innocently posting something. And then I was alerted that there were articles written about it. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, what is this? Like, and then I called my boyfriend, what's going on? Like, and then he said, well, and my mom said too, because they didn't feel sorry for me. They were like, well, you subscribed to this.
You posted it, so you deserve.
Yeah, like, well.
What were they saying? They were just saying.
No, it was just the story. I never thought that people on the media were watching my moves on social media.
Well, I mean, you're a person of interest, so every little thing that you do turns into a story.
You're a moron.
That is basically for not thinking about that. But the point I'm trying to make, I've forgotten what the point was.
You had no expectation that this would be shared far and wide.
Yeah.
You were just having.
Oh, why don't we follow musicians? Oh. You know, so, I mean, social media is curated. You know, so we're all showing up. It's like a date.
Yeah.
It's like a first date.
You're putting your best foot forward.
Yeah. You know, you go there and we're all pretty. We're all filtered. We don't have pimples. We don't have, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The best lights. The
basically
best,
bullshit.
A big lie, you know, but it's curated, you know. It's like an artist, when you go to an exhibition, they don't show the shittiest work. They show the best stuff.
Yeah.
Or an album. Yeah. At least you try to show the best stuff.
No, you do, because they're probably songs that you've left on the cutting room floor.
Oh, goodness.
Lots.
Yeah. I mean, even in Brave Confusion, my first album, there's some songs I'm like, oh, that didn't need to be there.
I heard a musician tell me once that the songs that they leave in the production studio, it almost feels like they've given up children for adoption, or they've aborted children.
Yeah.
Because these are your melodies, these are your ideas that are in your head.
And sometimes they, this is what hurts the most sometimes when you leave a song behind. So there's an idea that you're trying to communicate, and sometimes this song that you want to get right has this idea that is so all-encompassing that people will understand you completely, or at least you think, in this particular song, and it just doesn't work, right? And so when you have to abort it, and that's the word I choose to use, and when you have to abort it, it hurts so much, because people will never hear this thing
that you've spent so much time and energy on.
And sometimes that's a song that you spent years working on, you know, and it's just, you just don't get right. And then, because I'm working towards my new album now, and then 10 years down the line, you sit down and go, oh, there was that song, and it just clicks into place.
Yeah, it's meant to be.
You know,
it's hard in music to know when something's going to be a hit, right? You have no idea. Like with Christopher, what is Christopher all about, by the way? Who is Christopher?
Oh, my partner.
Oh, okay.
Well, but I wrote it.
If you two break up that song, you're going to hate it, right?
No, man. You know, the thing is that, like, people are like, how could you?
Yeah.
But I wrote Christopher before I met Christopher. I call it a stalker anthem.
Wow.
Mm.
Tell me about this guy. How did you guys meet?
On social media, actually.
Oh.
So that's why I was excited sometimes. But what happened was that someone had told him about me, and I was... Christopher was actually written as a joke. It was written to annoy my sister, who hates Prince. And I said, I want to write a song with sort of the cadences of Prince in the melody. Uh-huh. She's like, oh, try it. And I did. And we'd already finished writing and recording the demos for the album, for the first album. We were going to go and check. This was around the end of the year. And we were going to go to the studio in the beginning of the year and record the album. And then I wrote this thing, and the demo was 10 minutes long. And I said,
well, this song's like 6 minutes long.
6 minutes long. Well, when you're at 5FM, you played the 3.5 minute version.
I know.
I'm happy that you got the...
I've got the whole one here.
The whole meat, the whole animal. Yeah. And I sent it to the label. I said, what do you think of this? I mean, this is whatever, you know? What do you think? They're like, oh, it's interesting. Because it's just like this big thing. And then we the next year, and then New Year, Christmas, New Year, and then we came and we were recording the album, and then we recorded Christopher. And they were like, well, you know, this is going to be the first single. And I thought, oh, God. Oh, God. Like, oh,
it's pressure.
God.
This wasn't, I didn't expect it to turn out this way. It's
because I still hadn't met the guy.
Yeah.
Right?
But you wrote it with him in mind.
Well, yeah, because I was having a conversation with him. I was like, oh, man, come to my show, whatever, whatever. Because there's a lyric there, at the bar we'll meet.
Uh-oh.
And it's about getting laid.
I see. Okay, so you want to get laid. You like the look of this guy. It's purely physical.
He's cute.
And then... You've written this song, but it's not meant to be the number one song. It's not meant to come out first.
It might not even be an album.
And the record company say that we're going to make it the first single.
Yeah.
And that means that when Christopher does come to your show, you're going to have to play this song and he's going to know it's for him.
So it gets more interesting. It gets more interesting because happens is that it's going to be the first single and then like life falls apart, right? I'm homeless. I live in my friend's couch. I only have like a backpack, a tote bag of my clothes, and I'm living between friends.
Sure.
And then he sends me a message and says, hey, when are you going to visit me? And I play coy. I'm like, when you invite me? And then he says, well, I'm inviting you now. I'm like, okay, cool. He's like,
was this a booty call?
Initially, I thought it was going to be, mm-hmm. And so I went to this guy. Well, he's like, so what are you up to? I'm like, well, this is a single.
You go to his house?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I stay for the weekend.
Sure. Mm. How many times do you two have sex?
I don't remember.
So how long after you walked in the door were you two playing with each other?
With each other's bodies?
Yeah.
It took a while. A couple of hours. Yeah.
Did he at least offer you something to drink?
He cooked for me.
Wow.
Oh, there you go.
You know?
All right.
The whole chicken.
Who's got the bigger penis out of the two?
Oh, but talk.
Shut up, my buddy. God. We're busy here. We're having a man-to-man conversation here.
Who's got the bigger penis? Between you and me?
No. Between you and Christopher, who's got the bigger penis?
He.
Okay. Mm. And he's a white dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he's British.
This is the end of this conversation.
Yeah.
Very exciting. This is very exciting.
Why do you care so much?
Because people don't talk about this stuff and everybody wants to know.
You know what?
Did you go straight to anal?
Fuck!
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you warm it up with a little bit of hand manipulation, some oral pleasure. Where do we go with this?
Come on,
help us out.
Wait till
Miss Commonwealth comes in here, then we're going to have some fun.
You know, it's something I'm ashamed of. Fuck it. I mean, I have sex and I enjoy it.
Sure.
But, man, there has to be some mystery about what I like.
Okay.
You don't have to Did you go straight to anal?
No, I haven't done anal. No. Not, at least not the kind you're thinking of. No, this is interesting stuff, though. You went for a booty call, you stayed the weekend, and then you found yourself in a relationship.
3.5 years later.
Three and a half years.
Now, people say that it's very hard to have relationships if you're gay because there's a lot more promiscuity. Do you believe this?
No.
You don't think so? You think they've got as much chance of survival as straight people?
It's human beings.
Okay.
Human beings are problematic and fucked
up. Did you guys know that you were meant to be together after a certain time? Was it almost instant? Or have you realized that now, after about 3 years?
I take it day by day. Like what you said about, well, if we break up and now we have the song. That song was of that time. And I'll continue to
You wouldn't
it.
Regret it. You no, wouldn't look back and no. go, oh no.
It was completely true at the time.
Because Billy Joel doesn't like doing Always a Woman, because he wrote that for Christy Brinkley and they had that very ugly divorce, and now whenever he sings it, he thinks of her and it makes him uncomfortable. He said as much.
You can reappropriate songs. You can change the meaning. You can change I mean, when I listen to some of my favorite songs, what they meant to me 2 years ago is not what they mean to me now, but they're still dear to me. You know, so just because there's a name on the song, it doesn't mean. Also, you can perform a song without any emotion.
Yeah, that's true.
You can go there. Do you think all those guys that perform on Idols feel exactly what they're singing?
No, I know they don't.
But they hit the notes nicely, you praise them.
Do you watch the show?
No, I vowed not to because I auditioned and you guys turned me down.
Really?
Oh.
You!
I did?
Yeah. I wasn't as good then, I think.
Bring it, take it out, get it out. No, you got it. Obviously, there's some poison in your system.
Which
get rid
season
of it.
Did you audition?
I was 16 at the time, though. That was 12 years ago.
Okay.
In PE?
No, in Joburg.
Okay, well, because I was going to say.
Do you remember what the judges
you did
said?
You did say that PE is the armpit.
Yeah, I did. I still get shit for that. So, what did I say to you?
Incredibly dull.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then Marlo was still on the show. Marlo was like, I'm sorry, Danam.
Oh.
And I was just like, what do you mean? Like,
Did you want to kill us?
No, I was just so sad. More than anything. I didn't sing for a year.
I'm sorry.
Did you perform your own song or did you go in there?
I sang
Well, clearly I have no ear for talent.
I sang a Robbie Williams song.
Oh.
She's the one.
Oh,
I regret that.
Well, maybe that, some days it's just not your day, I suppose.
But you also, I mean, now when I look back on things, like when I look back on rejections, I mean, life is full of rejections and people are like, oh, I'm afraid to be rejected. I'm like, well, you're rejected all the time when you're driving and a robot turns red. That's rejection. Are you going to cry about it?
Some people do.
I know. Some people do cry. I'm like, chill out. Like,
I know people who.
It's not personal.
They'll break down in tears because the robot went red.
I've seen that too, actually. I'm not having a joke. I'm like, are you serious? Like, what kind of.
All right. Well, here's my formal apology.
Thank you.
I clearly made a terrible error.
I told my music teacher that because I was in PE and I said, I'm going to ask if he's going to be auditioning me. And she was like, are you going to tell him about the show? I was like, I don't know. Wait up. I'll see.
And well, then. Sometimes people slip through the cracks. I'm not perfect.
But
I know I look fantastic.
But look at it now. Perfect. Look at the, like then I wouldn't have become a songwriter.
Really?
No, because I was just a reciter at that time.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I that was my training. I was taught to recite classical pieces, and then when I was singing pop songs, I was reciting pop music, and then when I was in drama class, I was doing drama pieces that were written by other people. So at some point, I was tired of singing other people's songs, though. So I was like, you know what? I went Idols 3 times.
Oh, my God.
And
the other two?
No, I only made it once to you guys. Okay. I was so bad. That
if I'd rejected you thrice, you denied me. That was what Peter did to Jesus, right?
No. Yeah, right? No. Peter, see, you know.
We both know a lot about Jesus.
But then Peter, look what happened to Peter. You know?
He became the boss of the disciples.
You know what I'm talking about?
It's not all bad.
But which, again, going back to the idea of rejection, I mean, that wasn't the road I was supposed to travel.
And what about that moment where you were going to give up on music and you were so close to giving up and then the record company came knocking the last minute?
So I said to my friend, I was 25 years old. I said to my friend, I was 24 at the time. I was like, if I'm 25 and nothing has happened, I'm going back to Alice where I was born and I'm going to grow potatoes. And she was like, And I was completely serious. I was like, I'm not going to be trying this for the rest of my life when I know I'm fucking talented.
Yeah.
I was like, then I'm just going to stop because also, what if I'm not?
what if you're not? Because
there's the chance, you know what I mean? Like there is that you could not be talented. You may think you are and you may hear things, but maybe you're not. Mm. Or record your album and when you're dead, in 20 years time, someone will discover it and then whatever. But at this point in time, I'm not going to put myself through this pain. And
I think everybody in every job in the world wonders if that's meant to be where they're meant to
be. Yeah, but I always knew. There was never a time where that was the first time that I doubted my talent. I always knew from when I was 3.
So how did it suddenly come together at the last minute?
So I started participating in punk bands and I was very, very indie and the more lo-fi the recording, the better.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd gone the completely like to the other extreme, you know, like, oh, it's so squeaky clean. Listen to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These losers.
Right.
No distortion in the voice. Uh-huh. And so I started performing in these underground clubs and these very grungy places, getting my street cred, whatever that means.
Uh-huh.
And I started, I remember because and my friend who was a manager, who was also a church friend of mine, he was playing with me at the time. He said, I got a newsletter from Tans Cafe when Tans Cafe was still a thing.
I remember that.
And they were like, an acoustic competition. I said, oh, man, I don't want to do competitions ever again. You know what?
Look how painful it's been so far. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like I'm hurt and I'm done with competing with music. You know, if I get discovered now, it'll be through the age old way of being discovered, which is you play and you play and you play. And then one day someone important comes to you and say, hey, would you like to have a conversation? And that's how it happened. I played and I played and played, but I went to this competition.
So who was this genius who found you?
Carl Anderson from Just Music.
Yeah. What a smart guy, huh?
Yeah. I love him. Still love him. Today we still talk. Even though
he's done well. He's like, he's been paid like a huge amount of money by Apple to help them with Apple Music or something, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he still communicates with you regularly.
Oh, Carl's family. We talk almost every week. Still gives me advice on things. He was like, I used to call him my white daddy because I never had. No, anyway. That's another goddamn can.
Well, you know what? You never had a daddy, or you don't want to talk about your daddy, or it's.
I'm what?
No, you're just you've got so much experience at such a young age already. Like, there's so much stuff that you've been through.
See, a lot of things happened to me when I was very young, and then throughout my life, and that I didn't ask for.
Yeah.
And I just channel all that emotion in my work. I mean, I remember going to a doctor about, and she was like, well, what?
Is the therapist?
No, I've never been to a therapist. I don't believe. Okay. Well, not that I don't believe in them. I just go to GP because I feel like a GP is not going to bullshit you. They were like, you need to be on medication, deal with your shit, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Know? Or I go to a psychic, whatever.
Psychic?
Sometimes.
Okay.
So
you still get that hankering for the supernatural, huh?
I believe in the supernatural. I just don't believe that there's one way with it.
Okay.
Like when I go to my aunt, who's a sangoma, and she's like, if you want to pray, pray. If you want to go to the church, go to the church. If you want to, there's no limitations to how you have a conversation with God or you, the universe, or whatever you believe
in. That seems sensible.
And I like that. I don't like the exclusionary, like, way that some Abrahamic religions are.
You go to hell.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just try to be, don't kill people. Try to be nice. Just try to be a good person, mm-hmm. whatever that means. Just try not to kill people.
Well, it probably means you shouldn't pitch up at someone's house and be having sex with them 2 whole hours later.
But 3.5 years later, look how happy.
I really loved it. It was so.
I'm not going to.
I was
please.
Like, yes,
I absolutely am not judging it. I think more people would be happy and content in their own lives.
I have a friend of mine who is a musician as well. Yeah. I won't say who he is, actually, from a famous band. And he said he doesn't believe. And he's completely gorgeous. He said he doesn't believe that a relationship will work unless people fuck on the same on the first night.
Really?
He says none of his relationships where people waited worked.
Well, maybe there's some truth in that.
Because that fizzing of feeling, you know, that.
If there isn't that attraction, it's never going to happen. And you want that attraction to result in something. Otherwise, what the hell's the point?
Yeah, but let's not pretend that, like, that when you look at someone...
That's what Mabali does every weekend. Different men.
Every... Now, you see now. You're going to have people calling me all sorts of names.
But you should... Oh, like, even... Okay, let's just... Let's say it's not a joke. And you really are, like, having... So what?
I know. I still need to...
Gareth does it.
I need to get to that point where I'm just like...
But
so,
I'm an emotional...
So what?
I'm
I don't care
wreck,
what you think.
So.
That's also... That can
no
be endearing.
Depth. No.
That can be endearing.
No, it's terrible. It's something I've got to work on.
Are you seeing someone?
No. I'm also not into therapy.
You know, here's the thing. So I've been on antidepressants before, and I was just this... I was just this blank space. I was just...
Numb.
Completely numb. I had no feelings. I couldn't write. Even when I played the guitar or when I sang, it was without any emotion. And also, I was crying all the time. It could also be because I was drinking while I was on antidepressants.
But hang on. Aren't the antidepressants meant to stop that sort of thing and make you feel a little bit better? You're saying they just clear you out?
They're well, me. Maybe I wasn't on the right ones because it's trial and error, you know, until you get the right dosage. And maybe my therapist wasn't as good as I thought she was, but I just couldn't. And I know I would rather be sad. The only thing I take medication for now is anxiety. But I don't take medication
and
when for depression.
Do you find you get anxious?
When I wake up.
And really?
And are you anxious throughout the whole day?
Throughout the day.
Do you think the day is going to be bad? What worries you? What's the thought?
It's just this buzz within me.
You think something terrible is going to happen?
All the time.
Oh my God. What a way to live.
And I went to...
you're a disaster.
And I'm looking for something to blame. Oh, like, for example, like, people are like, why are you... I'm the worst person to drive with as well.
Because so, any second we're going to die.
We're going to die. Something's at any
gonna,
moment.
I remember Leanne used to say she would walk and look at her pool. She would walk to her pool. She was on all kinds of medication.
Yeah.
She would walk up to her pool and she'd look over at her pool and she would picture herself like sunk at the bottom of the pool, dead.
Yeah.
Doesn't that look... Oh, okay.
No.
You do that. You do that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, so for example, when I'm washing dishes, I always try... Oh, my word.
Go on, tell me.
I'm a little worried what people are going to think of Nkani Ture after this.
Go on.
But anyway, it is what it is.
It's among friends.
But when I'm washing dishes and when I'm washing sharp knives, I always leave them last, right? And when I've washed them, I wash them and rinse them quickly and then put them away quickly, just in case one falls and goes into my eye. Because that stuff happens.
It's right that you are on medication.
But that stuff happens.
I think we need to get you.
Have you seen 6 Feet Under?
Stop it! You're being ridiculous. Listen, you're a hugely successful, very talented man. You seem to have more of a grip on who you are than almost anybody we've spoken to who's double your age. No, really. All right, Mubs?
Absolutely.
You've got a lot of people who love you. You've got a lot of fans who are very impressed with your work, and we know there's more to come.
That's nice. Thank you.
So just stop with the knives and the anxiety, for God's sake.
We need That's to get why I'm you, on medication.
Yeah, but we need to get you talking to the right people.
Like, for example, like it's the most amazing because I'm really afraid of flying, right? And I fly all the time. But I just, the bigger the plane, the better, normally.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Because I'm not going to fly into some small plane that rattles every time. Like, sure. It just scares me.
The little ones make you nervous.
They really...
They make me nervous. I won't lie.
You know when it takes off?
Yeah.
I just feel like the moment it takes off, it's just going to fall. And we're going
to... Shame.
But
what a life.
Is that an irrational fear?
Totally.
It's not...
Totally. Dangling in the
people
sky?
People take off in planes every day. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of planes that take off
like,
every
it's
day.
Safer than...
And
one
out of every, what is it, 100 and something thousand?
No. You know what? I don't think it's an irrational fear, but the problem, I imagine, when it comes to you is that you're afraid of everything. So for some people, they're afraid of flying, but you're afraid when you're in the car as well.
Yeah.
Then you're afraid of the knives.
Locomotion is crazy. Locomotion is a crazy thing.
You know what? They got to up the dosage. I'm going to recommend Bill Cosby as your therapist.
But, oh, goodness gracious. But
now, I have got a lot of pills for you.
You know, okay, so, but now, but so I know, but okay, so, okay. So my doctor says, I'm just running how does she term it? More adrenaline than other people.
Okay.
Like, you know, so.
Okay, so you get a bit manic.
Yes. Like, I remember... Okay, when I met my boyfriend, I was quite crazy. I was like, I'm better now. Believe
you're
it or not.
You're more calm.
I'm more balanced
controlled.
Now.
Right,
he'd be like, I'll be there at 9:30. And it'd be like 9:32. And I was like, you said 9:30. You're lying piece of...
Okay.
But I was.
But now you're better.
I was psychotic back then.
Yeah.
But I'm better now. But the point is, but now, I understand what it is now. When you give it a name, when you understand it, and you take care of it, you know.
No, you're doing something about
nothing,
it.
Nothing dreadful is going to happen at all times.
No, not something dreadful isn't going to happen every moment. There will be some dreadful things.
Mm.
That's part of life.
And you've already been through some rough times,
right?
So.
But it sounds to me like you really do have a grip on who you are. You're headed in the right direction. Mostly. So tomorrow's going to be better than today.
I hope so.
Every day should be.
I think so too. I mean, like, I look at my life. Like, so it took a while, because in my mind, right, I was like, I'm gonna write some songs, I'm gonna be signed, and I'm gonna be like Michael Jackson, of course. Like,
quick.
By 14, I will be a huge star.
And that fucking judge from Idol.
But that was like 16, 17, 18. You. By 22, I was like, I'm a husband. Like,
listen.
Oh, my word.
You
have to shut me up.
Your therapy session time is over now.
Yay! It's gone into overtime.
We can have another session soon.
This is nice, though.
I want to talk to you again. You sound like the kind of guy I could have a really good conversation with. You have lots to say. You have lots to tell us. I want to get our final guest in here, though, so we're out of time.
Should I get out?
Nakane, thank you so much for coming to see us.
Thank you. It was amazing, actually.
Really good to talk to you. Yeah. I hope you weren't nervous about this.
No, I took medication.
Oh, boy. All right. Did you up the dose?
No, just one. One is enough.
Just one. Okay. All right, dude. Here's the Black Coffee song. We dance again with Nakane Touré. What a pleasure to meet you. Properly.
You too, man.
Yeah. Nice to have you here. There we go. What an interesting dude, huh, Mubs?
Absolutely.
This is CliffCentral.com.